Just one of the problems that faces every preacher at Christmas is it's all been said. I mean, we've been going on for 2,000 odd years, celebrating this every year, and not just celebrating it on the day, but, you know, we celebrate it for 4 weeks beforehand with all different Advent things. Then you have carol services and everything. So really and truly, the ability to say anything original was lost a long while ago. And indeed, you know, the ability to say anything isn't pretty obvious was lost a long while ago. So it's going to be obvious, it's going to be unoriginal, and I'll try and keep it short because it is getting a bit chilly, isn't it? What struck me about Christmas this year, reading this particular passage, this is how the birth of Jesus the Messiah came about, is what Matthew says. And then it just simply struck me, and these are not very profound thoughts, you'll be pleased to know, the reaction to the birth of Jesus. What sort of reactions it actually brought about. Because it seems to me that there were a number of them, and it's worth just sort of noting them quickly. Firstly, there was a simple kindness that the birth of Jesus brought about. What I saw in Joseph. I heard somebody recently, on the radio, speaking rather disparagingly about Joseph, you know, who was a righteous man and who didn't want to put his wife to shame, so was going to divorce her quietly. And it was said in a way of sneering way, oh, he would divorce her quietly. And frankly, I think what that was somebody reading back into time our sort of attitudes and sentiments. Because Joseph, you might describe him rather better. The word that's used for righteous, you could describe really as kind, as kindness. They had a different scheme in those days. They were a bit more complicated than us. You know, what happens in this, you know, people fall in love, they get engaged, they get married. Well, hopefully in that order, not always that, it can be varied. It was a bit different in ancient Israel because, first of all, there was the engagement, as it were, which was a sort of usually arranged. Often well in advance of a couple going to get married. And then there was the betrothal, which was celebrated and was considered binding. You know, this was the point at which this was going to happen and you couldn't change it, except by a divorce. It was a formal thing that had to happen to end the pledging, the betrothal. And at that time, though, there would be no union. There was no coming together. There was no sexual relations between the couple. And then, after that, you got the marriage, which was the full thing, went on for about a week, the celebrations, that is. Hopefully the marriage lasted a lot longer than that, but, you know, celebrations for a week, and that was the full thing. Now, where Mary and Joseph were was in the betrothal bit, and that's why it was particularly a problem that Mary was pregnant, because that meant, you know, everybody knew where babies came from, that meant there'd been an unfaithfulness. There'd been a breaking of trust. There'd been an ignoring of love. There'd been a betrothal that was shattered. And it was quite appropriate, quite fitting, and in that culture, very often happened, a man would askance, say, well, that's it, go, divorce, that was it, public disgrace, shame, and all the rest of it. But Joseph didn't do that. The coming of the Messiah, although he didn't know it at the time, but it simply stirred within that good man a gentleness and a kindness to sort this problem out without damaging Mary and her reputation and so on. There would have been other ramifications like that, but that's what he wanted to do. There was a simple kindness. And that's not a bad thing to be provoked, is it, really, by the coming of Jesus. The other thing that struck me, though, looking at this passage, was that there was a simple awareness of reality as well. I've already said everybody knew where babies came from. That was real. That was rather obvious. But we're told here that this was a somewhat different child. Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary home as your wife, because what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will give birth to a son, and you are to call him Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins. The reality here was that God was actually entering human life. Now you might say, well, how can that be? And the answer is, I don't know. And I'm not sure anybody knows. But one of the things that struck me here was the simple way in which this is all recorded. You know, in the ancient literature of Greece and Rome, and actually Egypt and other great cultures, there are virgin births, as it were, or at least there are couplings between gods and human beings. But they're very different from this. You know, you get Zeus becoming a white bull and coming down and doing the business, so to speak, with someone. Or you get him coming as a swan. Or you get Mars, the god of war, becoming a shower of gold and resulting in a lady having a child. They were very imaginative in those days, obviously. But it's nothing like this, is it? This is simple, straightforward. It has the ring of truth about it. If God was to become Emmanuel, God with us, it had to be through a woman giving birth to a child that God had somehow fashioned as a vessel for himself. Now, as I said, no one can understand that. But the reality of it, I would simply suggest to you, is clear. A simple reality. God becoming human through the child who was Mary's child and the child of the Spirit. And then the other thing that struck me was that there was a simple grace or giftedness about this as well. Because Jesus, well, the name means the Lord saves. That's why the angel said, for he will save his people from their sins. There was a gift being given in this child that was actually going to transform all of humanity, in a sense. Actually, Paul later on will say that will transform the whole of the universe. Because one day all things will be gathered up into Christ and be made whole. And that will be a gift. That is the gift of God. It's not something that is manufactured by human beings. I don't know if you've ever noticed, every time human beings try to make something work, something goes wrong. When Sue and I first got married, we had a rather ancient A40, an Austin A40. Some of you may remember those. This one was so old, it didn't even have the hatchback bit. At the end, it had a boot, amazingly ancient. It was so old, I could even adjust the carburettor. Now, there are two things you need to know about that. Two things you need to know. A, it was clearly a very basic piece of kit, because these days you can't adjust anything on a car, really, unless you've got a computer and everything else. And the other thing is that do-it-yourself in our household stands for destroy it yourself. And I always found that every time I tried to do something to repair that car, something else went wrong. You know, you wanted to put a bulb in the lamp and the fender fell off. You know, it was just, that was how it happened. And in a sense, it just strikes me that so often when we as human beings put our energy, our ingenuity, of which there is much, to trying to solve problems, we often forget we've created a few more on the way. God has come as gift to begin to work in human lives that can resolve such things and can resolve truly problems. It will take time. It is not overnight. It is not something that you can just say it will be this way, that way, or the other way. It's God come amongst us, Emmanuel, God with us, that we know in Jesus, and where we see him taking sickness and making it whole, where we see him providing food for the hungry, where we see him reaching out to people who are outcasts, lepers and so on, where we see him actually building bridges across into enemies, when he speaks of Samaritans as friends, as good neighbours, rather than the enemies that they were to the people of his day. We see Jesus doing all of those things that we yearn to see happening in our world, because he's God with us. A simple gift, in a sense, that Jesus is to the world as well as to us. And I suppose what we need to say always is that the measure of God's commitment to us is Jesus Christ. He didn't send an aid mission consisting of Gabriel, Michael, and a few other angels. He actually came himself. There's something very, very important in that, very profound in that, very significant in that. And so we need to ask, I suppose, well, what does all that therefore mean for us here and now? It seems to me the kindness and the gift sort of goes, it's a circle, isn't it? It's God's kindness and care results in gift through the reality of people's lives. And I guess what we need to just simply remember is that the God that we worship in Jesus Christ is not absent. By the power of the Holy Spirit, he is present, still active in people. And particularly, and this is the shocking thing, active in us, who are part of his body, that we call the church. What happened in Jesus Christ, the kindness, the giftedness, the reality, is now being manifested in you and me. A bit scary, isn't it, really? But on the other hand, not that much. God with us. Remember that? God with us. Now, the Spirit with us now. Bread and wine have reminded us of that reality, that truth. And just as that first Christmas, no one would have noticed anything other than an ordinary human family and an ordinary human birth under slightly trying circumstances, admittedly, but an ordinary thing. So it is now that people will only see ordinary people like you and me doing ordinary things. That's what they'll see, but what underlying it will be is God at work. So our words of kindness are not just ours, they're God's. Our acts of random kindness are not just ours, they're God's. Our desire for what's just as we stand up for against what's wrong, that's not just us, that's God. Our desire for people to find wholeness isn't just ours, it's God's. Our prayers for them are not just ours, they are Jesus' prayers, prayed through us and in and through us. You see what I'm talking about? That's what we actually are because of Emmanuel. And it may not look like that. And there will be times when you will no doubt think, well, I don't really feel much like that. But that doesn't stop it being true. Jesus, the baby, described, you know, rather nicely in that poem, you know, as red and wriggly and with tiny little fingernails and toenails. He didn't look like God. Didn't stop him being God's son, did it? And even when he was grown, he didn't look like the Messiah. Certainly people didn't think so, because they had a rather different picture of what Messiah might be. But that didn't stop him being Messiah. Jesus said elsewhere, I'm the light of the world. That's what he came to give, to, in a dark place, shed light, for guidance, for comfort, for security, for hope, for a future. But he also said, you are the light of the world, didn't he? You are the light of the world. You, my people, who are following on from me, who've allowed me to take up residence in your life, or in the words of one writer, to have allowed the Holy Spirit to walk around in your shoes. That's the Christian life. God with us. The Spirit walking around in our shoes, shedding light, sometimes where we know it and intend it, often where we haven't intended it and don't know it, but God's done it nevertheless. This is how the birth of Jesus, the Messiah, came about. As we are his people in this world, it makes us a bit vulnerable. Babies are vulnerable, aren't they? Nothing much less, more vulnerable than a baby. But what we have is the assurance that God is indeed with us. And that though we may be vulnerable in what we try to do, God's power is with us. God's presence is with us. God's desire for better is with us because God is with us in Jesus Christ. A simple kindness, simple reality, and simple gift. And that gift, once given so long ago, has not been withdrawn. It's ours still. Last time I came, I don't know if you remember, last time I came, I gave out some things. And I've got some more things for you to give you. Just to remind you, what I want you to do is to take one of these. It's a picture of a candle. It was a bit of a joke going on beforehand because I've got a candle app on my phone, which is less destructive than these, but I was going to float, but I'm not going to do it. What I'd like you to do is I'll pass these out. Just take one of these out and keep it with you. Would you pass them around? In this week. Stick it, put it in a pocket, put it in a book, put it somewhere. Just to remind you that Jesus is the light of the world and you are the light of the world. We are the light of the world too. That what Jesus began continues in his people and it continues with as much power and effectiveness as we trust in him. And just take that out perhaps each day. Let it be something that reminds you. If you want to take more than one to pass on to somebody else, by all means do that. There is enough, I'm sure. But use it as just that little reminder of God being with us in the here and now. Because that's the truth of it. That's the reality of it. That's the giftedness, the grace of it. That's the kindness of God to us that he's done these things for us.